ears ringing, a pounding. Her head, God, yes, her head, but something else. Was someone pounding on the door? They couldn't get in. No, they couldn't get in, but maybe if she could scream, they'd hear. If she could stand up, or nearly stand, fill her lungs, and scream, maybe. She tried, sobbing as she struggled to pull up on her trembling, buzzing legs. As she sucked in air, as she managed a rusty croak, the dizziness swept over her in a wave. She fell forward, struck the toilet lid face first. Fresh blood exploded from her broken nose. Both front teeth drove hard into her lip before they shattered. The pain, wild and feral, lasted only an instant before she slipped limply to the floor. Outside the house, Bauer used his fist to pound again. "No lights on inside," Deeks jogged up. "No car in the driveway. She's got a Mercedes sedan, new, registered in her name."
"Could be on the run."
Bauer stepped back. He nodded to the uniform behind him.
"Take it down."
The battering ram struck once, twice, and on the third took down the heavy mahogany door.
"This is the police," Bauer called out as officers went through. "We are duly authorized to enter the premises. Come out with your hands up."
Deeks hit the lights. "Shit. Looks like we got some blood here." She crouched down. "Dried blood on the floor. Maybe she's not on the run."
"Let's clear it." "Old houses like this are a maze of rooms,"
Mooney pointed out as Bauer directed a team to take the second and third floors. Weapon ready, Deeks pulled open a coat closet as Morstead moved toward the back of the house, still announcing police presence. Wachowski cleared the front room, the side parlor, and Mooney moved to the door under the stairs. Another closet, he thought. Maybe a powder room. He smelled it as he reached for the door handle.
Blood.
Puke.
"I got something here,"
he called out, then yanked the door open.
"Well, fuck me. We need a bus."
Holstering his weapon, he stepped in, crouched down. He put his fingers on Nikki's throat.
"She's alive. She's out. Christ, she's been in here a while."
It was Deeks who stepped up, looked over Mooney's shoulder. "Some of that blood's fresh.
We need bolt cutters in here."
"Lost a couple teeth. That's fresh, too."
Mooney turned her on her side so she wouldn't choke on her own blood.
"Bashed her head on the John's what she did. Look at the spatter. Went down hard, but she's got older bruises, and I'm betting her nose was already busted before she face-planted."
"Food in this box? Cereal? Crackers? Got some nasty-looking apple cores? Banana peels? A near-empty bottle of Advil? Whoever chained her to the wall didn't want to kill her."
"She's got a brother."
Bauer walked up.
"Christ, she's a mess. Bus is on the way. We put out an APB on the car." "Might want to put a bolo out on the brother,"
Mooney said. Bauer took in the unconscious woman, the chain, the box of supplies, and nodded. She came around a little in the ambulance. Her eyes rolled open, shiny as glass, rolled up, rolled side to side.
"You're all right now, Nikki."
Bauer leaned toward her as the EMT checked her vitals.
"You're safe now. I'm the police, and you're on your way to the hospital."
"Why?"
She lisped it, then moaned.
"Oh, my face. I can't feel my face."
"We gave you a little something to help with the pain," the EMT told her. "She's in shock, detective."
"I can see that. Almost there, Nikki, and they're going to take care of you. Can you tell me what happened? Can you tell me who did this to you?"
She felt floaty and a little sick and numb and too cold. But she did her job. She couldn't seem to help herself.
"Don't know. Man at the door pushed me, hit me. Then I was in the bathroom. The chain."
She let herself weep.
"Did you recognize him? Did you know him?"
"No. Hit me. Why?"
She closed her eyes, tried to think.
experiment?
She tried out the word.
Did he say, can't remember, laughed, hurt, everything hurt?
What did he look like? Can you remember?
She remembered the boy she'd wanted in college, the one who'd smirked at her when she'd tried to attract him, the one who'd made her feel ugly and stupid, and described him.
Tall, young, brown hair, wavy hair, blue eyes, very blue. I remember, pretty face, dimples when he smiled, accent, southern, soft, southern, hurt me, tired now.
She closed her eyes, and though she stayed awake, let herself drift. JJ couldn't hurt her here, she thought. She would go back to her life now. Soon. She didn't care if he hurt somebody else. She'd paid enough. It wasn't her fault. At the hospital, Bauer huddled with his partner, with Mooney, and with the two Richmond detectives.
She said she didn't know the guy who locked her up. She was in pretty bad shape and doped up, but she gave a halfway decent description. Nothing like the last photo we have of the brother. She went out before she could give me more detail, but brown and blue, wavy hair, young, tall, dimples and southern accent. Some strange guy hits her house, punches her, locks her up, steals her car, but leaves her food and pain pills? And 2 days before my niece gets popped?
Mooney just scowled.
That's some major bullshit. We'll go at her again, get more details. And if it's bullshit, we'll push her right into it. But she came right up with that description. Said something about an experiment. Like a question, like she wasn't sure. We've got a bolo out on the brother, and we're looking for the car,
Wachowski pointed out.
And maybe I lean with Mooney on the bullshit, but you have to ask. Why would she lie? If your brother punched you out, chained you up, why would you lie about it? Maybe the whole family's crazy.
Morstead shrugged.
Sure, her record doesn't show anything out of line. The fact is, it shows bupkis. You can ask yourself, too, was she part of the whole thing? The two of them working together, and so they had a falling out?
I follow that, Deeks nodded, and I like that angle. But then you have to wonder why she wouldn't flip on him straight off. Claim, oh my God, my brother, what's he done? He said this, that, he's lost his mind, I had no idea. And who's not going to be sympathetic to a woman whose brother punches her in the face, chains her up, and then leaves her with boxes of cereal for what had to be at least 2 or 3 days from the looks of it?
We'll take another run at her when they get her patched up.
He checked the time.
Shit. Look, I'm going to check on her status. The way I see it, we should try to catch a couple hours down, come at this fresh. You sticking, Richmond? We'll stick until we talk to her.
Morstead looked at Deeks. Got a nod.
There's a crib at the station, but I wouldn't recommend it if you've got room on your expense account for a motel. I'm going in to sit with Rachel. I'll wait for the status, and I want to be in the room if you talk to her, but then I'm going to be with the family. Same hospital. And ain't that a kick in the fucking head?
Mooney looked back at the ER doors.
One thing we know. She didn't shoot my niece. But that doesn't mean she wasn't part of the whole. Search team's on the house. If there's anything that ties her, they'll find it. I'll go check on her.
Bauer listened to what he thought of as the usual medical spiel. Patient needed rest and quiet. Added to it, he got confirmation that she had facial injuries more than 48 hours old, and the lacerations, abrasions on her wrist went back the same amount of time, which put her out of the running for the Richmond murder. In addition to the broken nose, the chipped cheekbone, the severe wounds to her mouth and her right wrist, she'd suffered a concussion and would likely have confusion and memory gaps. After he pressed, hard, he got clearance for 5 minutes with her, which he planned to stretch. Then the doctor insisted on 8 hours of rest. In the interest of fairness, he took Mooney and Deeks, hoping for a female perspective there. He put on his officer-friendly face as he stepped up beside Nikki's bed.
How are you doing, Nikki?
I don't know. I'm so tired. I'm in the hospital.
and you're safe. Nobody's going to hurt you. I rode with you in the ambulance and we talked a little. I'm Detective Bauer.
Ambulance? I can't remember.
That's all right. You told me about the person who hurt you. I need to ask you a few questions, then we're going to let you rest. You said he was young. Can you tell us what you meant?
Who are they?
Her swollen eyes landed on Mooney and Deeks.
I don't know them.
They're police, like me. We're here to help you, to keep you safe. How old would you say the person was who hurt you?
The man.
She closed her eyes again. She nearly said 20, because he had been, but worried that would seem too young.
I'm not sure. Late 20s, maybe 30s. I'm sorry.
That's fine. Just fine. A white male?
Yes.
What was he wearing?
I'm not a uniform. No, I don't think. Maybe. No, I can't remember. I'm sorry.
Could you describe him again as best you can?
Tall.
How tall?
I think taller than you, I think. A little strong. I think he was strong. Wavy brown hair and beautiful blue eyes. So pretty, so charming. The dimples, the accent, like a movie star.
When you're feeling a little better, would you work with a police artist?
I can try. I'm so tired now.
You said experiment. Did he say that to you?
Experiment? Did he say that? I cried. I was crying and he laughed. I had the toilet, didn't I? I could get water, couldn't I? Here's some food. Take these pills. I'll come back.
He said he'd come back?
I think, yes. I was afraid he wouldn't. I was afraid he would. I was afraid.
Did he come back?
I don't know. Sometimes I thought I heard voices, but I don't know.
Where do you keep your keys? To your house? To your car?
The dish on the table by the door. If you put them there, you always know where they are. I want to sleep now. Just sleep.
Mooney stepped slightly closer.
Was the man in the house when Rachel McNee came to see you?
She actually felt fear shoot down her spine.
Who?
Rachel McNee. She came to see you. She's a private investigator.
Yes. Yes. No. I remember someone came. I just got home. Had groceries. Why did she come? What did she want? My father.
Nikki closed her eyes.
I don't want to talk about my father. None of it was my fault. I was a child. I wanted her to go away. She upset me. I didn't let her inside, did I? And she went away. Was the man with her? I think he came right after, soon after. I thought, there's that woman again, and I want her to go away. I was angry. I opened the door, but it wasn't her. And he smiled, and he hit me.
He hit you in the doorway? Deeks pressed. When you opened the door? What had she said before? How was she supposed to remember?
I'm not sure. It's blurry. He looked so nice. I don't know why he was so mean to me. I want to sleep. I have to sleep.
Okay, Nikki.
Bauer patted her hand.
You get some rest.
With some reluctance, Mooney stepped out.
It's pretty damn convenient how she remembers some things real clear and others are all blurry. I'm not disagreeing with you, but trauma can do that. One way or the other, the trauma's real.
Trauma doesn't mean she's not lying, Deeks pointed out. And I think she is.
So do I. Why do you?
There's something almost dreamy about how she describes the guy, like she's got a crush going. And if she doesn't know him, if he's never been in the house before, how'd he pick a room with no window, an inside room? How'd he know just how long to make the chain so she could reach the sink to get water but not reach the door? I'm seconding Mooney's bullshit call. He was so mean to her? You call bashing her face and chaining her to a wall mean? Something's off.
Not disagreeing with you either. Maybe she had a lover and things went south. This went down. But we're not getting any more out of her tonight. Soon as it's light, we'll have some cops canvass the neighborhood, knock on doors. We'll see if anyone saw this guy. She started to say uniform, but changed her mind. But maybe he passed as a delivery guy, a repair guy, a cop, to blend in. And we'll go over it with her again tomorrow. Maybe we'll get lucky on the car tonight yet. But I've been on shift for damn near 24 now. I need a few hours down. So does everyone else. We can meet back at the station at 8, and we'll interview her again as soon as we can. If something breaks before, we're up and on it. Meanwhile, we keep a guard on her door. Nobody gets in who shouldn't, and she doesn't get out. I'm going up to check on Rachel. If she wakes up before 8 and she remembers anything, you let me know. We got it, Sarge.
JJ pulled the van onto an old logging trail about a quarter mile from Traveler's Creek. The van didn't much care for it, but he wouldn't need it much longer. He needed a little sleep and didn't want any idiot cops or Good Samaritans checking on a van pulled to the shoulder of the road. He'd considered breaking into Adrian's house while she slept, but he knew, because of her stupid blog, she had a dog. A big one. And he suspected she'd have an alarm system. He figured he could handle the alarm system. But dogs barked. And they bit. He'd do better to wait. Deal with the dog outside. Since he'd worked out a plan, he could catch some sleep, set his phone alarm for, say, 30 minutes before sunrise. Then he'd hitch on his backpack holding his tools and hike to the woods. He'd studied the lay of the land since she just fucking loved doing her fitness shit out there. He'd find a good spot to watch her house. Once he'd dealt with the dog, he and his baby sister bitch would have a nice long get-together. Years in the making, he thought as he settled down to sleep. And he'd deliver her final poem in person. She didn't sleep well. Too much in her head, Adrian admitted, as she gave it up and rolled out of bed at dawn. She'd fallen in love and didn't know how to handle it. And she knew very well when she didn't know how to handle something, she picked at it until she found some fix, some workaround. But this wasn't a program or a recipe or a hairstyle. Love was a singular condition. And her mother was coming. She'd have to deal with the new complexion of their relationship, those cautious steps. And there might be a conversation in there about that singular condition. She'd never talked to her mother about something like this, never considered that kind of sharing. So how to handle that? Using her phone, she switched off the alarm so she could open the porch doors. She stepped out, studied the fire of the waking sun in the eastern woods, laid a hand on Sadie's head as her dog joined her.
Pretty morning, Sadie, so that's something.
She had a dozen decisions, big and small, to make on the youth center. It had to be right. Had to be just what her grandparents had wanted. Would they care if she chose the checkerboard pattern instead of a solid color for the safety tiles for the playground area? Probably not, but she'd pondered that at 4 in the morning. Pondered it, and the choice of foundation plantings, the style of the juice bar. Worried over that and more to keep herself from thinking about the fact she had 2 half-siblings who might want to kill her. Out of her control, she thought, and she hated having anything out of her control. She had to depend on Rachel for this, and hoped she'd hear from her before the end of the day. She'll tell us when she knows something, right? She leaned down to give Sadie a rub. So we just wait. Let's go salute the sun, what do you say?
get out of our own heads. She changed into yoga pants and a tank, pulled her hair back in a band, and in bare feet went down to the kitchen with her mat. Restless night or not, she loved early mornings, the quiet of them, the air, the sense everything but her and Sadie and the birds still slept. She freshened Sadie's water bowl, filled a bottle for herself, and left the porch doors open to the air as they went down to the patio. Taking the unrolling of the mat as her signal, Sadie wandered off into the yard. Adrian stood a moment, facing the light, pink and gold now just above the tree line. Somewhere a woodpecker drummed busily for its breakfast, and a hawk circling overhead hunted his. Tomatoes ripened on vines she'd planted, and the lush sweep of hydrangeas her grandparents had planted years before thrived with heads that would soon turn madly blue. A pretty morning, she thought again, and another fresh start. Hands in prayer, she breathed in, then lifted her arms high. From his perch in the woods, he watched her. It thrilled. There she was. Not on a screen, not in a crowd as she'd been when years before he'd traveled to New York after he'd learned she'd appear on the Today Show, but in person and alone. What a way to start the day! He hadn't expected her to come out so early. And she'd left the door open. He'd almost shouted with joy when she'd stepped out on the second floor porch, just stood there, looked right over where he hid. Maybe the dog was bigger than he'd thought, but he'd take care of that. Sadie, he remembered from the blog. Bitch dog for a bitch. He liked dogs. Couldn't stand cats and had plugged his share of strays in his time, but he liked dogs. Maybe he'd get himself a dog one of these days, he considered as he loaded the rifle. Not a bitch, though, and he'd be damned if he'd have his dog's balls cut off. A man had to be a man, didn't he? As the dog wandered closer to the woods, JJ shouldered the rifle. A little closer, big girl, he thought. But when her head came up, when she sniffed the air, maybe scenting him, he fired. The sound, no more than a muffled pop, didn't reach Adrian on her mat as she lowered into Chaturanga. JJ watched the dog take a stumbling step, and one more, then go down. Night-night, he thought. Mind clear, breath steady, Adrian continued her flow. Her muscles warmed, her mood mellowed. She held in Warrior One, let the stretch work its magic, then slid fluidly into Warrior Two. Deep, so her body sighed with it. And with her gaze focused along her right, outstretched hand, she saw the man come out of the woods. Everything froze, and in that frozen moment, she hurtled back, years back, to Georgetown. Not possible. Not possible because she'd seen him wheel over the railing. She'd seen him fall. She'd seen him die. But he walked toward her now, smiling a terrible smile. Run! She heard the voice scream inside her head. But when she started to swing around and charge the steps, he leveled a gun at her.
Take a step. I'll shoot you. I won't kill you, but I'll take you down.
Beyond him, just to the left, she saw Sadie sprawled on the ground. Warning or not, the terror and grief spiked.
Sadie!
When she started to run for the dog, he stepped in front of her.
One more step, I shoot you in the knee. It'll hurt like hell and you won't run again. She's just sleeping.
He beamed that smile again out of the face of a dead man. And for a horrible instant, she was seven again, and helpless.
I don't kill dogs. What do you take me for? Tranquilizer gun. Picked it up back in Wyoming just for her. Just for today. Now you're going to walk on up there into the house so we can have some privacy.
He smiled that smile again.
We've got a lot of catching up to do. Sis.
Not the man, she realized. His son.
almost a mirror image, but she could see some differences now. The son had a slighter build and no silver glinting at his temples. The hair itself, choppily cut, not styled. But the eyes, oh, the eyes were the same. Despite the smile, rage and madness lived there. And she wasn't seven anymore. She wasn't helpless.
"You're Jonathan Bennett."
"Just call me JJ."
"You've been sending me poems. For a long time."
"Got another for you, but that'll wait. We'll talk inside."
If she could keep him out here, she might still find room to run. Or Sadie, if he told the truth, might wake up. "We were just children. You, your sister, me. We didn't do anything."
"The child makes the man, or the whore bitch, depending."
"Is your sister here, too? Does she want to talk to me?"
"It's just you and me. Nikki, she likes to put up walls, tune out. She's like our mother that way without the pills and booze. Well, she's inside four of them now, and there she'll stay."
She heard pleasure in his voice. Not rage, not fury, but an almost dreamy pleasure. Maybe she could reason with him.
"I don't know anything about you or her. I just..."
"You'll find out plenty. Up the stairs, nice and slow. You try to bolt, I blow out your knee. Move."
And that rage, that fury flashed to burning in his eyes.
"Or I'll put you down and drag you in bleeding."
He would. She could see he would. She turned for the stairs, tried to think, just think through the screaming fear. She knew the house, every inch. He didn't. A moment's distraction, that's all she needed. Dozens of places to hide, dozens of ways to fight back. But she needed a distraction, and couldn't risk it with a gun at her back. Get to her phone. In the bedroom, on the charger. Get to her phone, call for help. She stepped into the kitchen, scanned over to the knife block. Maybe, maybe if an opportunity came.
"Close the doors and lock them."
She obeyed, but she was thinking now. If he'd wanted to kill her outright, she'd be dead. He wanted to talk first. He wanted to tell his story, or rage at her, or both. He wanted to hurt her before he killed her. That gave her time, and with time came opportunities and distractions.
"Some place," he commented. "Big-ass house. I grew up in a big house, but I've been making do with a nice little cabin for a while now. Upstairs."
"Upstairs?"
"You left doors open up there, too. You thought you were all safe here, didn't you, in your big-ass house?"
"Upstairs," she thought, her phone on the charger. She walked, considering places she could hide or areas where she could fight, weapons she could use. A lamp, a heavy vase, a paperweight, a letter opener.
"Why poems? Why did you send poems?"
"Because I'm good at them, even as a kid. My dad was proud of my poems."
"It was hard for you, losing him."
"I didn't lose him. You killed him."
He jammed the gun into the small of her back.
"If you hadn't been born, he'd be alive."
Training kicked in, so she calmed herself with breath.
"I didn't know about him until that day. My mother never told me. She never told anybody."
"I don't give a gold-plated fuck about who she told, who she didn't. He's dead because you're alive."
She glanced at the bronze statue on a table in the upstairs hall. Heavy, she thought. She walked past it and into the bedroom.
"Close and lock."
Phone on the charger just a few feet away. Distraction. She turned toward him, let all the fear shake into her voice.
"I don't know why you're doing this. I don't understand why..."
He backhanded her with his left, hard enough to knock her to the floor and send pain rocketing through her face.
"Close and lock. Do what I say when I say it, or I'll knock some teeth out next time.
She pushed herself up, closed the doors, turned the lock. And when he sidestepped, picked up her phone, her hopes dropped. He tossed it to the floor, stomped on it, grinned, said,
"Oops."
He gestured with the gun toward the love seat, the reading chair.
"Take a seat. Now! Unless you want another smack."
She'd be ready for it next time, and she knew how to counter. He had a couple of inches on her at best, and she had longer limbs. Wiry muscles, yeah, but she'd pit hers against his. She'd have to. But he still held the gun. She sat in the corner of the love seat nearest the door. He shrugged off the backpack, set it down, took the chair.
"Now we're all cozy."
Chapter 30. In the yard, under the strengthening sun, Sadie's legs began to twitch. Her eyes rolled open. When she tried to stand, they wouldn't hold her, so she lay panting, confused. She vomited up the sick in her stomach, lay whining. She wanted Adrian and cool water. When she managed to get up, she stumbled forward a few steps, sicked up again. Slowly, drunkenly, she walked toward the house. She wanted to sleep again, but she wanted Adrian and the water more. She stopped at the yoga mat, sniffed at it, felt some comfort when she smelled Adrian. But there was another scent, one she'd smelled before something hurt, before she got sick. Human, but not familiar. She didn't like it. It made her growl. She walked to the patio doors, but they were closed, and she didn't see Adrian inside. It was hard to walk up the steps. It took a long time, but there was water, and she drank and drank. The food bowl was empty, but she didn't want to eat. Adrian didn't come to let her in, so she waited as she'd been taught. She whined again, hoping, then looked up the stairs. She didn't want to go up. She wanted to go in. But she walked toward them, and with a canine sigh, started up. In the bedroom, JJ held the gun steady.
"Damn big house for one skinny woman."
"It's my family home."
"The grandparents croaked, didn't they? Grandmother all smashed up in a car, and the grandfather just died of old. Fucking pizza, right? Maybe I'll grab some when we're done here."
"You think you're special. You think you're important with all your DVDs and the streaming and the blog, telling people how to live, what to eat, getting them to jump around and buy your overpriced bullshit. My father was important. Dr. Jonathan Bennett, my father. You got that?"
"Yes. He was a teacher. That's very important."
"He was smart, smarter than you. Smarter than anyone. He only stayed with our pill-popping mother because of me. He loved me."
"I know he did."
"He protected me."
"Of course. You're his son."
"And he's dead because of you. Because your whore of a mother got herself pregnant and tried to trick him. I don't see any of him in you. Never have, so that was probably a lie. Doesn't change what happened. She came onto him like all the others. A man who doesn't take what's offered is a fool, and my father wasn't a fool."
"Let him tell his story," she thought, as she sat with her hands quietly in her lap and considered the weapons in the room. Her grandmother's candle stands, heavy, easy to grab and swing. The copper bowl she'd bought at Maya's shop, decent weight, throwable. The letter opener on her writing desk, the scissors in the middle drawer. Sharp. Keep him talking. "None of the others had a child from that, or pretended to. Why have you killed them?"
"That nosy bitch you hired got to that asshole reporter, didn't she? He'll be sorry about that. She already is."
Cold washed over her, brought popping chills to her skin. A terrible twist inside her belly.
What do you mean?
She thought she was smart too, but not as smart as me. I'm my father's son. I killed her last night, left her bleeding in the street.
Oh, God.
Adrian gripped her elbows, rocked.
Got what she asked for, coming around to my house, trying to get my sister to blab on me. Well, Nikki won't be blabbing.
He smiled, so wide.
You killed your sister?
Not yet.
He snickered and grinned again.
But when I do, that's on you too. You hired the nosy. You brought Nikki into it. So you killed them both, just like you killed my father.
You ruined my fucking life, you whore. You took away the only person in this world who loved me. You should never have drawn a breath. None of this will bring your father back.
I know that!
He pounded his fist against the arm of the chair.
Do you think I don't fucking know that? Do you think I'm stupid?
Her heart beat in her throat now, wild as the rage in his eyes.
No, but I don't understand what you're trying to do by killing. I'm trying to understand.
I'm avenging him, you idiot. That's what a son, a true son, does when his father's been murdered.
No. No reasoning with him, she realized. But she could stall. Do you think he'd want you to do this? To spend your life doing this? You said he protected you. He wanted the best for you. You could have been a teacher like him, or a poet. Your poems are so compelling.
He taught me to stand up for myself.
He jerked his left thumb at his own chest.
I'm standing up for myself and for him. My poems are an homage to him. And I saved the best for last.
With his left hand, he unzipped the top compartment of the backpack, drew out a carefully folded sheet of paper.
How about I read it to you?
She said nothing, but she braced. She'd charge him, she decided. If he was going to shoot her, it wouldn't be while she sat like a helpless weakling. JJ cleared his throat.
At last, long last, when you and I meet, true justice, my justice, will be complete. And when you breathe your last gasping breath, I will smile upon you in death. For when your blood drips from my hands, I'll sing and shout to beat the band.
He let out a hoot of laughter as he set the paper aside.
Beat the band. I added a couple more lines to this one because I wanted to end with a little levity. It's a happy day for me, a goddamn red-letter day. And I wanted some irony, because I'm going to beat you to fucking death.
He got to his feet. Adrian drew in a breath as she prepared to rush him. And with an explosion of barks, snarls, Sadie charged the glass doors. Distraction, she thought. Terrified as much for the dog as herself, Adrian kicked his gun hand. She managed one punch, connecting with his shoulder instead of his face as the gun clattered across the room. Then she ran.
Run!
She shouted at Sadie.
Run, Sadie! Go! Run!
She hoped to make it to the stairs, but she could already hear him coming. Instead, she ducked into one of the bedrooms. Places to hide, she reminded herself. Ways to fight back.
Going to hurt you worse now. It's just going to be worse now.
She grabbed an antique letter opener from the desk in the guest room, slipped into the Jack and Jill bath, and silently into the next. They'd see about that. Since he woke early, Raylan decided he'd try to get some work in before his kids got up and scattered his day like dandelion fluff. Mariah wanted the training wheels off her bike, which scared the crap out of him. But her brother rode a two-wheeler, and now she was determined to do the same. So he'd promised he'd teach her. Since he'd work, he pulled on jeans and a shirt before heading to the kitchen where he considered coffee or Coke. Coke usually won, and today was no exception. He let Jasper out, stood enjoying that first hit of caffeine, enjoying the quiet of the house. Following well-established routine, he got Jasper's breakfast, toasted a bagel, let Jasper back in so they could both eat in peace.
He'd managed one bite of bagel when Jasper's head shot up out of his bowl. And he howled.
Quiet, Jesus, you'll wake the kids. I need an hour.
He rushed to the door.
They must have gone for an early run. Okay.
Jasper howled, and outside, Sadie barked like a maniac. He opened the door to let Jasper bullet out.
We both get a morning girlfriend fix, but shut the hell up, both of you.
He went around to the gate where Sadie, who rarely let out more than a woof, stood on her hind legs, rattling off barks.
Hey, take it down, girl.
He reached for the gate with one hand, laid the other on Sadie's head to stroke.
You're shaking. Where's Adrian?
Now, with both dogs howling, he saw Sadie didn't have her leash. Adrian never took her for runs without her leash.
Christ. Oh, Christ.
Struck with terror, he ran into the house for his phone, his keys, and running still, hit the memory key for Monroe and Tisha.
Yo,
Tisha said cheerfully.
Yes, I hear the dogs, Phineas.
He's got her. I think he's got Adrian. Call the cops, watch my kids. I'm going.
What? Monroe, Raylan says that bastard has Adrian. He's going. I'm calling, Raylan. I've got the kids. Go. Crap, Monroe's coming. I'm calling 911.
Both dogs jumped in the car before Raylan could. Monroe burst out of his front door wearing a t-shirt, gym shorts. His feet were bare, and he held a baseball bat.
What the fuck?
Monroe said as he all but dived into the car.
Sadie, she's shaking. No Adrian, no leash. That's all I've got.
He reversed out of the driveway, turned on a dime, and a sick feeling.
Sadie wouldn't run off for nothing.
Monroe looked back to where Sadie panted and growled and shook as he called Adrian.
She's not answering, and now I've got the same sick feeling. Floor it.
In her hospital bed, Rachel made a sound somewhere between a groan and a sigh. Her eyes fluttered. At her bedside, her husband squeezed her hand.
Come on, baby. Come on back.
Her eyes opened, looked through him for a long moment, then focused.
Ethan?
Yeah. There you are.
He pressed her hands to his lips, struggled not to weep.
There she is. You're okay, baby. Everything's going to be okay now. Can't keep a Mooney down.
Her uncle stepped to the other side of the bed, bent to brush his lips over her forehead.
I'll get the nurse.
Wait.
She fumbled for his hand.
Shot me. Jonathan Bennett. Looks like his father. I saw him before he fired. I saw him.
We're already looking for him. Don't worry.
Wait. Richmond cops called. Gonna get ice cream, but Richmond called. Can't remember the names. Killed Tracy Potter down there. Came here for me.
Richmond's here, in a hotel a couple blocks away. I'm going to let them know you're awake.
He said something. Something.
She had to dig down. Things were waking up and awakened hurt like a bitch.
He said something. Going to finish me. Don't know why he didn't. Thought he did. He said, two down. Two bitches down.
Her eyes shot open again.
Potter, me. He's going after Adrian Rizzo, Traveler's Creek. You've got to notify.
I'm on it,
her uncle replied, and stepped out of the room. Once the door closed, Rachel turned her head toward Ethan.
The kids.
They were here. Everybody was here. They're okay, and they're going to be a lot better when I tell them you're awake.
I could sure use some good drugs right about now.
She managed to smile.
Never got that ice cream. Sorry, babe.
Pressing her hand to his face, he let the tears come. He couldn't shut up. Adrian knew where he was, the direction he took, because he couldn't shut up. He cursed her, taunted her, while she, in bare feet, her breathing carefully controlled, moved silently. She knew he'd gone back for the gun because she'd doubled back to do the same, but he'd beaten her there. She hadn't found a way to get to the stairs and down without exposing herself. But she calculated how long to get to the doors leading to the porch.
unlock the doors, pull them open, which wouldn't be completely silent. How long to get outside and outrun a bullet? The thought of it coated her skin with fear sweat. She was fast, but nobody was that fast. Still, she'd try it, have to try it if she had no choice. But she had another idea. Still gripping the letter opener, she grabbed a small bowl and tossed it into the room across the hall. When she heard him pounding down toward the sound, she melted into another room. She began her careful, silent backtracking, and this time she stayed ahead of him. With sweat, stress sliding down her back, she had to wait, breathe, listen, as he made his way from room to room. Being more careful now, she judged. More thorough now. Time to go. Time to move. She braced, then dashed out of cover, exposing herself for the few seconds it took her to sprint back into her bedroom. She turned the locks on the doors to the porch, dragged them open. The creak of the hinges sounded like a scream. Seconds later, it felt like seconds later, he rushed into the room, eyes wild, guns sweeping. When he charged to the doors onto the porch to look for her, she sprang from behind. She drove the point of the letter opener between his shoulder blades. When he shouted in pain, swung around, she blocked most of the blow. But what landed struck the cheekbone already throbbing. She used the pain to fight. Gripping his gun hand, shoving it up, she dug her nails hard into his flesh. She learned he was stronger than he looked, but nearly swept his legs out from under him as they grappled. He tried to punch out with his left, but only glanced off her shoulder. She brought her knee up, a violent piston. Though she caught more quad than balls, she saw the fresh pain ripple over his face. And with their faces close, she got her hand on the grip of the gun. It fired twice into the ceiling. Raylan leaped out of the car before it came to a full stop. He rammed himself against the front door, then just whirled to the window. He used his elbow, shattering the glass, and ignoring the tear of shards, reached through for the lock, shoving it up, vaulting through. He didn't have to shout for her. He could hear thuds, crashes upstairs. As he flew up them, the shots rang out. It wasn't terror, he felt. Not then, but a blind, blazing rage. Adrian risked taking one hand off the gun, used it for a short-armed punch to JJ's throat. He choked, gagged, but before she could follow through with a second, he shot his elbow up. It caught her under the chin and knocked her head up. She saw stars, 1,000 stars, and he managed to fling her, as his father had so many years before, so she hit the deck of the porch. With instinct, muscle memory, she drove her hands down, pumped up her legs. He tried to dance back, tried to aim the gun. And Raylan was on him. She heard that ugly sound of knuckles against bone, saw them grappling for control of the gun as she shook her head to clear it. She saw blood, Raylan's blood, and levered herself up, balled her fists as she prepared to wade in.
Run!
She bared her teeth.
Like hell!
She snarled it and picked up the bloodied letter opener that had dislodged from JJ's back. The gun went off again, the bullet smashing through the wood of the railing. As the sound rang in her ears, the dogs leaped through the door together in one snarling, snapping mass. JJ screamed as teeth sank into his calf, his hamstring, his shoulder. Raylan wrenched the gun away as JJ wheeled back. He struck the railing. The crack of wood snapped like another gunshot as the force sent him, like his father, over. Monroe, holding the bat like a man prepared to swing for the fences, dropped it, pulled Adrian back.
Cops are coming. I hear them. We'll get an ambulance. Don't look, honey.
I'm okay. I'm okay.
You bet you are.
He hugged her tight, then turned her into Raylan.
Unlock the door next time, bro.
Sorry. Wrapping around Adrian, he pressed his face into her hair.
No worries. I'm going down to check on him and call Tisha. She'll be plenty worried.
because the dogs still snarled, still growled as they looked over the porch, Adrian called to them.
Quiet down. Good dogs. Sit. Stay. Stay.
She looked up at Raylan.
Stay.
Count on it.
He's got a pulse, Monroe called up. Smashed himself up real good, but he's breathing. I'll bring the cops around.
Thank God.
She dropped her head on Raylan's shoulder.
I don't want him dead. I don't want him dead like this, and in this house. Not in this house. How did you know to come? How did you know I needed you?
Sadie told me.
Sadie!
That broke her. Broke the chain of control so the tears flowed. Raylan picked her up, kissed her hair when she laid her head on his shoulder, and carried her downstairs. In under 24 hours, Adrian had a house full again. Her mother, Mimi, Harry, Hector, and Lauren all came to join what she thought of as the Travelers Creek Brigade. The youth center crew sent flowers, as did the staff of Rizzo's. Others called or came by to see her. The dogs received many gifts of chew bones, balls, and boxes of biscuits. Friends and family, she thought. Friends who were family. She felt lucky. She felt blessed. She felt finally and completely safe. She had a long phone conversation with Rachel and cried more than a little. Jonathan Bennett Jr. would recover from his injuries. The stab wound between his shoulder blades, the black eye, bruised throat she'd inflicted, the broken nose delivered by Raylan, the multiple dog bites, and the concussion, broken leg, shattered elbow, and internal injuries sustained in the fall. She'd been assured he'd live to spend the rest of that life in prison. His sister broke under questioning and provided a long, detailed statement from her hospital bed, including his confession to her that he'd killed their mother. Considering the circumstances, no charges would be brought against Nikki Bennett. And considering the circumstances, Adrian thought herself lucky and blessed to have survived the encounter with only some bruises, some bumps, and scrapes. She'd talked and talked and talked some more with the police, with the FBI, and for now, at least, refused any reach-outs from the media. All she wanted was to set everything aside and just live. She sat on the opposite side of the house from where the crew rebuilt the railing on the top porch and replaced blood-stained boards on the lower. More gratitude, she thought, as they'd simply come, unasked, as soon as the police cleared it. So now she sat with her two oldest girlfriends, drinking lemonade. Jan and Mimi lorded over the kitchen, making who knew what for what Monroe decreed would be the world's fiercest cookout. Monroe, she thought, her sweet friend she'd never heard raise his voice except in song, had literally run over broken glass to help her. She looked out over the slope of the lawn, over to the mountains, down to the rooftops, the covered bridges of Travelers Creek.
I think this must be the most beautiful spot in the world.
It ranks, Tisha agreed. And I want to say again that Hector and Lauren can bunk at my place, give you some space and quiet tonight.
I like having them here. I love how they just showed up, knew they could, that they just needed to see me for themselves.
She glanced at Maya, shook her head.
And I can't believe Joe talked them into going fishing.
It shocked him to the core of his being when he heard neither of them had ever sunk a line before. He swears we'll be grilling up some fresh trout tonight.
And bless his heart for taking Finn, Colin, and Bradley along with them, Tisha added.
He'd have taken Mo, too, but she just said,
Maya put on her best incredulous face.
Why would I want to do that, Joe? Worms are slimy.
God, I love that girl.
Me too, Adrian sighed. And I love our world.
She glanced over to where Sadie and Jasper lay snuggled together, snoozing.
Every bit of it.
Lena stepped out, a glass of ice in her hand. She came to the table, poured from the pitcher.
I've been evicted from the kitchen, she said as she sat, deemed woefully inept and inadequate. Mariah's accepted and helping make cookies shaped like hearts. I'm rejected. Good thing you don't like to cook.
Lena nodded at Adrian.
Good thing. Your Monroe's also accepted and, after some serious discussion, is in charge of deviled eggs.
He makes the best deviled eggs in the history of deviled eggs.
He and Jan and Mimi debated the various ways to boil them to ensure easy peeling.
Now Lena laughed.
I'm so glad they kicked me out.
Maya and Tisha exchanged a look.
Better check on the babies,
Maya said as they rose together, and Tisha picked up the baby monitor. Lena looked after them as they went inside.
They're good friends. I know what it's like to have good friends. I've had Mimi most of my life.
Harry and Marshall, too, but Mimi?
Lifetime girlfriend.
She looked at Adrian then, touched a hand to her bruised cheek.
I'm not going to bring it all up again. I know you've had to go over and over it, like we did after Georgetown. I need to say I'm so grateful for your strength, your courage, your smarts.
A lot came from you.
You made your own. That day in Georgetown, I thought, this isn't going to define her, or me, but not her. I won't allow it. It didn't, but it never really went away. I hope it can now.
Can and will.
All those women, Adrian, all those others, and nearly you. I've asked myself again and again, what could I have done differently to stop any of it from happening?
Nothing. Mom, she laid a hand over Lena's. Nothing. He doesn't just look like his father. He has that same lack, that same twist inside him. I saw it in both of them. It was the fact I existed that enraged them.
He said something to me, JJ. He said he didn't see any of his father in me.
Neither do I. I'm Rizzo through and through.
Yes, you are.
Sadie's head came up, and Jasper's an instant later.
That's Raylan's car. He said he had a couple of things to do. I guess he's done them.
When the car crested the hill, Lena rose, walked out across the lawn. She went to Raylan, put her arms around him. She kissed both his cheeks, then walked away. Raylan stood a moment, touched and bemused, before he continued up to the porch.
She's not a hugger, so that was a moment, Adrian told him.
It felt like one.
Gently, he took her chin in his hand, studied her face.
Cobalt flame, you took a hit.
You too, Midway man.
But we kicked the bad guy's ass, with a little help from our friends. So this is for them.
He sat and took two dog collars out of the bag he carried, one bold red, one bold blue. He handed them to Adrian. She read the engraving. Ms. Sadie Wells, Mr. Jasper Rizzo.
I thought we'd make it official, a sharing of the last names.
I think it's the sweetest thing ever. Here you go, Sadie. Let's put on your new bling.
Now. You and me,
Raylan continued as Adrian started switching collars.
I think we need to make it official.
What?
She glanced up with a smile, then blinked when he just looked in her eyes.
What?
She repeated.
I plan to give you more time. Plenty of it. But can't. Moments matter, and moments change things. I don't want to waste any more of them. I love you. I love everything about you. I want everything about you. I need everything about you. So marry me. Let me marry you. Let's be a family.
Oh, Raylan, we're just getting used to—
You never get used to being in love, not really. I'm a family man, Adrian. I'm good at being married.
You are, yes, you are. Were, are. I don't know if I'd be.
You're a quick learner. I know I come as a package, just like I know the package is crazy about you.
We can add to the package if that's something you want.
More children?
If it's something you want. We're both good with kids, but you have to want them.
I just need to...
She rose, walked to the rail, looked out. A houseful, she thought. A house built for family, for children, given to her. Her legacy.
I've always wanted children,
she murmured.
Share mine. Have more with me. Be Ms. Adrian Wells, and I'll be Mr. Raylan Rizzo.
Trust you to make me laugh at such a moment. She closed her eyes.
When Sadie couldn't get to me, she knew where to go. To you and Jasper. She needed help and knew where to get it. I know where to go when I need.
She turned to him.
It's always going to be you.
Rising, he stepped to her, took her hands.
We can get married tomorrow or a year from tomorrow. You can plan whatever kind of wedding you want.
He reached in his pocket, took out a box, flipped it open, and took out a ring. Not flashy, she thought. He knew she wouldn't want flashy. A simple channel-set diamond in a white gold band.
But I'm really hoping for a yes now. The rest is details. We're both good at those, too.
You have to go and pick out the perfect ring for someone like me. Someone who does what I do, who is what I am.
I know who you are. I love who you are.
Say yes. I love who you are, too.
She looked at those wonderful green eyes, laid a hand on his cheek, bruised like hers.
You told me you hadn't believed you could feel this way again. I didn't believe I could ever feel this way.
Is that a yes?
I have a question first.
Ask it.
How soon can you and the kids and Jasper move in?
Smiling, he framed her face.
How about tomorrow?
You need to ask them first.
I already did, while you were working out this morning.
He pressed his lips to her forehead, pressed them to her hands.
They love you. I love you. Say yes, Adrian. Just yes.
So simple, really, she realized.
So right.
Because it would always be him. Maybe it always had been him. I love them. I love you. Yes, Raylan. Just yes.
When he kissed her, slow and strong, when he put the ring on her finger, she felt her life click into place. When she wrapped around him, she thought again, this is the most beautiful spot in the world. And now, it's ours.
This is January Lavoie. I hope you've enjoyed this production of Legacy, a Macmillan Audio production for St. Martin's Press. This title was produced by Guy Oldfield. Post-production by Tim Franklin. Text copyright 2021 by Nora Roberts. Production copyright 2021 by Macmillan Audio. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this program.